Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, I have one question, and one question only for you. What do you prefer, Goku's Kamehameha or Ryu's Hadouken?
I mean, that is not the question that I thought you were going to ask me, to be honest, mate. I don't know what I expected, to be fair. It's such a grab bag of opinions and stuff when it comes to filming the UBP.
The U and the B and the P.
Well, I mean...
What's your gut feeling? Because I was like, is it a power comparison?
So the Kamehameha, the Kamehameha is obviously incredibly powerful and super iconic. However, I was brought up with, in my life, Street Fighter came first before I even knew Dragon Ball existed. So for me, the Hadouken is always going to be the sort of like the fireball to the heart of my spirit.
Well, I thought that was my thing. I was like, Ryu's side of it, the Hadouken is, for me, more iconic. I get that the Kamehameha, like, it's an energy blast version of it, that like that would be the one that takes the cake. And that's what won on my Twitter poll. But I thought that Ryu would have won. I just thought everyone would side with Street Fighter, but Goku won public opinion.
Do you know why it is, mate? It's because it's the most recent thing that's appeared in Fortnite. And let's face it, a load of people out there are like Fortnite deniers, which is great because it's people like, I never play Fortnite. I don't know anything about this, but I will watch every single video of every single crossover, and I've definitely played it, and I've won a few of those. I was going to say chicken dinners. It's a different game that shows I don't actually play this
PUBG
game.
PUBG is the chicken dinners. Fortnite, it's a victory royale, I believe. I've not played Fortnite since 2017 when it initially blew up. But yes, this is the Untitled Battle Podcast. I am Scott Hilford. You are Jules Gill.
I am indeed, whether I want to be or not.
Yes, you are forced to be, at least on a Friday when we record this podcast, where we ask for all your questions, talking points, and whatever else you'd like us to talk about. But I just wanted to open on the old Goku versus Ryu, because I thought of that the other day, and I was like, I've not seen anyone compare this in terms of signature iconic energy blasts.
The thing is that like Goku often crops up in sort of like anime and video game and film things of who would beat who, and Goku majoritively just wins, like hands down, just amazing. So the thing is, we know, both Scott and I know, that the Hadouken is definitely not as powerful as Goku's energy blasts in general, but in terms of iconic, I'd say that Street Fighter's Hadouken thing, I don't know. You know, I think that Dragon Ball's just been around for longer as well, so more people know about it.
I think it probably is
proxy.
Goku could beat Ryu as well. Like, he would just power up. I mean, Ryu could become evil 100%. Ryu, but he's not, you know.
Would you just get his ass handed to him? Like, the moment you add evil to your name, Goku's already won, because Goku always triumphs over evil. That is that a thing that he does.
True, there is Goku Black, but I've not watched Super where he turns up, but he's in Fight, is he? Anyway, we get a whole bunch of submissions from you guys, so we'll get through as many questions as we can. First one from Jack Asbury, who says, hope we have a good time at EGX. That's this weekend.
Yay.
Me and you are going to be there.
You can't see it, but I'm doing my Kermit the Frog arm waving thing.
Yay! I'm so excited! Yay!
Inflatable arms. He says, what is our most anticipated game to play while we're there? Mine's Sonic Frontiers. I'm not hiding this.
What is wrong with you?
What do
You've got literally all those games there. All of those like crazy indie titles where people are trying new and experimental
stuff. Bin chickens left, right and centre.
You've got like Street Fighter 6, mate. Yeah. And then you're talking about Sonic Frontiers.
I've got to know. I need to know. It's that I've got to know. I've got to... I mean, this is the year of Sonic. I had a whole love in with Sonic this year. I played the entire franchise.
You say it's
the
year of Sonic every single time Sonic comes out. I swear down that you said
the
this
life
about...
Of Sonic.
What was that rubbish one that had you creating your own character?
That one rubbish one.
That was
Sonic Forces.
Right, said that it was the year of Sonic when that came out.
That was like 2018 or something. That, I mean, I would have played it at the time. I thought it was terrible. I went back to it when I was doing the bubble earlier this year, and I thought it was all right. I made little me.
What is what?
It's like a little wolf man. I thought it was all right.
Okay, so walk me through this, Scott. What's going on? Like, this
are
is
you
this,
all right?
This is you doing the great turn. Basically, you know that like Sonic 06 and Sonic Boom Rise of Lyric, they're bad games. Yeah, I worry that if I do not interject right now, that you're going to turn around in about 3 years' time and be like, you know, mate, not actually that bad. Not actually that bad, mate. Had a good time.
The Star Wars prequel effect.
Yeah.
The thing with Sonic Boom is, Sonic Boom, the main game, sucks. Like, obviously, it was unfinished. It was buggy as hell. Mm-hmm. Didn't play very well. Sonic Boom on the 3D. Yes, surprisingly good.
Is it now? I wouldn't know that because I stay away from that franchise.
I didn't even know it existed until I was looking into every single Sonic game. And I was like, oh, there's like a whole other version of this that's like an actual finished game.
Brilliant.
But yeah, I secretly low-key love the Sonic Boom designs now. I think they work as like a little spin-off thing, knowing that they kind of course-corrected afterwards. Like,
yes.
You know, Sonic Mania and whatever. Mm-hmm. And also the Sonic Boom TV show is absolutely stellar. I will not... Never mention that. That is a phenomenal show. That's a very well written show.
I've heard that it's actually quite good because it just plays fast and loose with taking the piss out of itself. And I'm always a fan of shows that are just kind of like, you know what, we've made a few mistakes. Here we go. Let's go.
Oh god, they've got like three or four locations, and there's a bit towards the end of the season where they're just sort of like, how many other storylines can we do in three locations? It's just things like that where I'm just like, you guys know how lame Sonic is. Like that's the whole thing. But yeah, so mine's definitely Sonic Frontiers. I just need to know what state that game's in and if I can extract any fun from it whatsoever. How about you?
I'm really looking forward to Street Fighter 6 because even though I am very well aware that we won't get a chance to play the single player stuff, I feel like it's just going to be like the versus mode stuff.
I assume so.
Looking forward to trying out some classic characters against the new ones that they're introducing. I know that there's meant to be 6 playable characters, the demos that are going around at the moment, so looking forward to that. I hope that they will give you an indication of what it's going to be like for the single player, even if it's just like a trailer, like some extra footage and stuff. Because at the moment, that's the bit I'm the most worried about. Because like you played Jump Force, didn't you?
Hell yeah. Well, I put the demo of Jump Force. I was thinking this. We should do a list of games, you know, collector's editions or collectibles or bonus items that were better than their games.
Oh, yeah.
Because the statue that you got with Jump Force was way better than the game itself. Like the one of Goku and dude from One Piece and Naruto was way better.
My worry is that whenever I see a decent collector's edition, as in like, oh, I want to buy this because of the stuff that's in there, I think to myself, oh, that means the game itself is going to be terrible. It like goes like the Venn diagrams cross over. It's like the more they do, it's like just there's a like terrible game in the middle. Because it was like I was looking at that God of War Ragnarok pre-order stuff, and I was like, okay, let's face it, the only thing I want out of that entire thing is the dice. I like the dice that's in there,
but it's
but it's one tiny thing in that game, so that makes me think, even though they're putting a load of other tat in it, that this game's going to be great. But when it was like the Saints Row Millionaires Edition, where you buy all the
Saints
Row, that immediately put me off of it because I was just like, right, okay, I know that you're doing this as a joke, and we're taking the piss out of collector's editions in general, but at the same time I was like, yeah, you're really just, your gimmick is gimmicks, that's all you've got.
Yes, you're trying
game,
to distract us from everything else. I like Saints 4, but that was the game that sort of broke the franchise. But yeah, EJX, you'll be there on Saturday.
I think
you're there across the afternoon. I'll be arriving in the morning. Si will be there too. I'm not sure what time they're arriving, but I think it's across the Saturday as well.
I think that we're all gonna try and reconvene or meet up around about 10, 11 ish, like when it starts opening, and then we'll meet you when you get in, because obviously you're going to arrive a bit later, and then we're going to be heading over to the Republic of Jungle stand, which is located, and again, I should know this by now, let's just say it's in the Great Hall, the Magnificent
Hall. We're doing some
hall.
Sort of stage thing where we've got to do Republic of Jungle, which is a game where we're going to be suspecting each other. I'm just going to accuse you the entire time. I don't know.
It's a party game in which you basically have to help the president, who in this case is an anthropomorphic puma called President Puma. Cover up all of these scandals that's going on. And one of you is a leaker who's trying to get these stories out there. Technically would make them the good guy, the whistleblower in this case, because they are scandals after all. And the other players are trying to stop that from happening. And it's all about sort of lying, tricking, using special powers and stuff like that to make sure that the information doesn't get out. It's going to be a great laugh. And we're going to be there from 1:30 until question mark. And then there's going to be a little like a meet and greet breakout session afterwards where you can come chat with us and even maybe get a chance to play with us on stage, which would be great.
Yes. And worth pointing out that the Republic of Jungle stuff is sponsored stuff, but it's very like Avalon and that thing game and stuff like that. Anything where you get to pretend you're something you're not and lie to your friends is always good.
Oh, we love a good betrayal game, don't we, Scott? We love a good betrayal game.
I think I've talked about it maybe on this podcast when we played The Thing and Ash was the thing and she revealed it at the end. I've still never really recovered from that.
It was just like anyway. Her on the helicopter, just like fingers raised, middle fingers in the air. She's like, enjoy that, assholes.
That was, that sort of made me just distrust our entire social circle, but not to worry. Yep. Next question from Willie Araya, who says, do CD Projekt Red deserve the goodwill they're getting after Edgerunners towards Cyberpunk? It's weird no one mentions the anime was officially announced mid-2020 when the game was still in development. Wouldn't it have been better to have the amazing 10 out of 10 storytelling in the game instead of licensing it? Now, this is a very interesting question.
We spoke about this in the similar terms as we did Hello Games when they went back and retooled and from the ground up No Man's Sky. I do think that CD Projekt Red is in a slightly different position to them. They had a ton of goodwill going in that was already established from prior games like the Witcher series. They didn't deliver what they expected. There was some sort of shady situations with the review outlets only getting copies of code that worked to the highest possible standard when the rest of the game was
PC.
And like last generation consoles were not up to scratch. That they do definitely deserve to be raked over the coals for, but I do commend their commitment to actually going back and continuing to release free updates and making sure that the game comes out. Admittedly, it's a case of the thing that Scott and I always say, you're actually just better off waiting. And if you pick up Cyberpunk today, as in went and played it today, you would be playing a game that is in such a good state compared to where it was before.
I always really loved Cyberpunk. I love it even more now. I've actually reinstalled it because of the Edgerunner stuff. I finished that the anime like the other day. I really like Edgerunners. I think it starts out a little bit rocky.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a great story. The thing is that's like that Willie Array is mentioning is, you know, wouldn't it be better to have that level of storytelling in the game? For me, they both hit very similar thematics anyway. They're both about the same idea of what Night City represents and disconnecting from it and the value of human connection and forging a relationship inside of all that. So it's very similar stuff anyway. And it's not like the game doesn't have a really good story. Really good story and really good characters anyway. And ideally, if they'd rolled these, if they hadn't messed it up, they would have both just arrived together anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that you've got to look at the main story campaign. Actually, I found really engaging. I enjoyed that. Up until a lot of like the sort of like, I feel like it lost me towards the end and then suddenly grabbed me back in for the very, very end, because it was like a case of, I felt like we were just like treading water for a bit and all the Johnny Silverhand stuff was just like, it felt like it was pushed a lot more than maybe it felt natural to.
You do the whole thing where you sort of live like his final day, gigs as him and stuff. I liked all that stuff,
I did enjoy that as well, but I just felt like I felt that they were almost two separate things. I feel like it could have been extrapolated as a separate campaign, but that's beside the point. The reason that the anime seems to be hitting with so much more heft than Cyberpunk done is because it's doing so over a shorter period of time. You are looking at like condensed, how many hours worth of TV versus how many hours worth of gameplay, and developers are put under so much pressure to make sure that their games are both engaging and long, because you are paying for quantity and quality, and that can sometimes make it feel like your main narrative thread, which is very condensed and really impactful, feels stretched out and thin over the course of 60 hours or so. So
that's a really good point.
They are the same story, just told in different mediums.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. The Cyberpunk anime is only like 20 minutes per episode, and I think it's only about 10 episodes anyway. Like, you can really burn through it.
Yeah.
And like I said, it hits a lot of the same beats as the game does in terms of the takeaway points that, like, I guess certain endings are making. The ending I got in Cyberpunk was very much lined up with how Edgerunners goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that, like, it's just a weird thing with Cyberpunk. Like, it's we're 2 years later now. Like, it's been patched loads. The Edgerunners content is doing really well. The thing is, I reinstalled it because I was like, I'm going to go back. I mean, I've already got over 100 hours in Cyberpunk, but I was like, I'm going to dive back in, start a new save, I'll do a Nomad. And immediately I went back into the city, and I picked up my old save, sorry, from near the beginning, and immediately Jackie, the character, just walked through a car. just like, I just loaded my save, it was the first few seconds of going back on it, and I was like, yeah, well, this hasn't changed that much.
Still a few technical bugs then.
Yeah, this is 100%. But yeah, I still really recommend that game. I love it. Next question from Elfar Oliver, who says, good evening or morning or whatever time it is. Quick food statement. Best side I've ever had with pizza is dipping the crust in chocolate dip. Easy as that.
Come on, mate. What are you doing?
Oh, God.
Okay, so this means that we're left with a situation where you've eaten all of your pizza and you've put your crusts to the side and then turned that into a dessert. Now, I commend
you. I've still never done that.
I commend you in one sense for making sure that you're not wasting your crust, because I hate people who waste the crust. It's like, come on, use it. They're like, dip it in something. Like,
yeah,
the chocolate sauce. I mean, there's nothing to hate. It's bread and chocolate sauce in that sense. But my problem is that there's cheese and tomato elements that are still going to be at that very edge, that corner bit there. And unless you've nibbled it to the precise thing to turn them into breadsticks, which, again, is an insane image. I don't know what's going on here. I can't support this. I can't support it.
I'm not sure if it's the Papa or if it's Domino's, but you can buy, or I remember getting a series of breadsticks from one of these outlets with a chocolate dipping sauce. Someone else has gone
madness.
Near this before.
Madness.
Yeah, it felt like madness at the time. But I guess, like you said, bread and chocolate, yes. But pizza bread, no.
Yeah,
it depends how it's done.
Because you might have the remnants of the previous main course in your dessert then. And I can't
pizza
imagine
remnants.
Anything worse than trying to mix Herbie tomato sauce, cheese, bread, and chocolate. That does sound like a madness combination.
I don't need
right
that. Yeah. So, yeah. Oliver also said, when we finally do a feast of all our food recommendations combined, will we drink our suggestions from the UBP mugs? Now, I have sent another message to the UBP mug maker just saying, can we get any update on whatever the hell's going on? Because we feel like mugs. So right now, we'll find out. But
So you sent a message and you didn't actually get a response back?
I'm going to reply.
That's such
a
non-story, Scott.
When I was gathering these questions, the people might want to know that they're coming together.
I love
because
this. Because
we
like,
don't know.
Right, okay, so for weeks, we've been saying, like, the mugs are on the way, the mugs are on the way. And then you go out there and be like, wait, I've got an update. The mugs are still potentially on the way.
Well, to be fair, we never progressed past we've asked for them. That's about as far as we ever got with it.
Okay, but so I'm making a statement right now.
Go on.
If we don't have a concrete answer by the 30th of September, which is going to be the next time
that next week
comes.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Out. I am going to take the designs. I'm going to put them onto a Spreadshirt or wherever it is, like the place, the merch place. And I'm going to sell them myself because we have gotten to the point now where we have asked relentlessly, and I will give a cut to What Culture. See how they like it for a change.
Yeah. I love you threatening on the middle of the podcast. I'll do it myself. I'll make my own merch.
Exactly. Like it's an image made from a mate, from Rich Hudson.
Yeah.
It was done for this. And we've asked for permission. We haven't, like, it's what's going on?
Until Vanapod's been going for a year. We've had the doodles for a long time.
Has it actually been going for a year?
We've been doing over. We did it 1 year special.
Oh,
we
mate, did my brain has turned to absolute cottage cheese, mate. Like, when was that?
The thing, if you ask me more specific questions, I don't know, but I know that we've definitely did over a year.
Because
I remember that being a talking point.
That's a round of applause for us.
I know, go us, man. We've managed to keep this train going. Anyway, next question from Stallington Blade, who says, how much do you think Nintendo have had to compromise Breath of the Wild 2 to suit the limitations of the Switch? I don't think it's on the regular Switch. I think it's on the next Switch, and then I guess they'll dial it back, but I think it's made for the next Switch,
like,
is my fan
theory. This is the thing, I was under the assumption that they had just squeezed every last ounce of power out of the Switch, and then Scott comes along with the idea that no, actually this is just going to be for them to drop the new Switch, and suddenly I'm totally on board with that idea. I do think that what better way to launch a flagship new model of your console than with a flagship video game like Breath of the Wild 2, Tears of the Kingdom. People are saying Tears of the Kingdom, and it has to be Tears.
It could be either, because I guess the kingdom is literally torn apart at that point.
Have Ratchet and Clank just pop out of like the tears in reality and just be like, sup, let's go.
I don't know if we're going to be doing some sort of time travel thing, because we've got like the old corpse of Ganon, and then Zelda's like manifesting loads of energy, and we've got a 10,000 year gap to fill in. I don't know. But yeah.
My one sort of like rebuttal to that is,
yes,
if you've got the architecture and if you are still using the exact same ground level of the world, but with a few twists, like maybe it's decayed more, similar to how Crackdown 2 used the entire map from Crackdown 1, but then changed up the actual like aesthetic themes and a few extra bits to it, you may be able to compress that data down in such a way that you could fit it onto a cartridge and still have space to do the above sections. Because
kind of like Red Dead 1 and 2.
We've only seen Link use that giant stone bird to fly across certain portions of the map. What if we're looking at a situation where the above sections in the sky are completely loaded in separately, and you cannot transition like by just... Because I know that it showed him jumping off the side and going down, but what if that was just a high cliff and not actually in the sky as in before? Or like the loading experience is you falling down to the ground sort of thing.
Well, Skyward Sword did that, where it was all separate. I would have to hope that their big show-off moment is like all of this is one big thing. But like, yeah, they've been so coy with it. Like, they've just, we've seen what in total like 15 seconds of footage or something. Yeah. It's very, very little.
There was another thing as well. Like, you told me that the Switch, when it's undocked, actually uses a different like method of power consumption, and therefore it's not as intensive on the.
I don't know if I said that, but the reality.
I wasn't sure if it was you back in the day, but we're talking like 2017 or something like that, we might have had this conversation.
Right.
But I'm thinking to myself that maybe you can only do those like crazy things with the Switch docked. I mean, would they ever say to a person, hey, look, this mobile console that you've got now, you can only get the most out of Breath of the Wild 2 if it's docked. That would be...
Well, I'll tell you what I thought. The thing that I thought was insane was like in regards to like splitting docked stuff and handheld stuff, the new Nintendo Switch Sports only works docked. Like, you can play it handheld.
I didn't know that.
I guess it depends on the type of game you're playing, but some of them need gyro controls. So it just barely works on the Nintendo Switch Lite. In fact, I don't think it loads at all on the Nintendo Switch Lite.
Oh,
I just remember thinking that was insane. I was like, I was going to buy Nintendo Switch Sports just to have a bunch of handheld sports.
Yeah.
But then I was just like, well, what's the point? I can't just play a handheld game of something. Maybe they've changed that or patched it, but I remember looking into that at the time, and it was like, because they rely on gyro controls, you can't have it handheld.
This is a life lesson for the kids listening at home here. Don't ever get your hopes up. You are going to be constantly disappointed. And as Scott just said here, once you hit your sort of like early 30s, what's the point? What's the point?
What's the point?
If it doesn't give you exactly what it says in the tin, Ron Seal argument, What's the point? Yeah. What's the point, mate?
There's no mug. All you've got is your bread and your chocolate.
Don't bring up mugs, mate. It's too soon, mate. It's too soon.
Just have 5 minutes. But yeah, I think Breath of the Wild 2, I think they'll do what they did with the Nintendo Switch version where it releases on both platforms simultaneously. But I think it'll be made for the next Switch. I think that's why it was delayed so much.
Do you remember when the Wii U version was launched and everyone was like, what's the point of buying the Switch version? And then Nintendo was like, oh, crap. What is the real reason?
I love at the time, like, what was that, 2016, 2017, when they had to differentiate the difference. Yeah. They had to make a point of saying the Switch version was worth it. And they said the Switch version had better grass effects and audio. And I was like, brilliant. Yeah, we're all just zooming in, looking at the waves of the grass. Like, that's the best.
I remember them doing, like, you know, the IGN, when they do their sort of like graphics comparisons between different consoles and PC and stuff like that. They did one for the Switch. It was literally the same game, the same footage. And I was just there like, the only difference here is the price. You're paying 10 quid more for level of the
exact same. Nintendo, though, so we just do the little theme song and we just laugh and buy it.
Legends of the game.
I think the only thing that's interesting, or one of the things that's interesting about Breath of the Wild 2 is that assumedly the UI will be completely different, because the UI on the Switch was made for the Wii U's tablet. Why it was all tile based and whatever. So
it's,
I wonder if
they
reinvented
actually,
that
wasn't it? Like,
a lot of people didn't like it. I didn't mind it, but I think that, like, yeah, they might end up like changing that stuff around. But yeah, we'll see what the hell that thing is. I think we'll know more next March or next May, whatever, when we get closer to the release date. Next question from Gula Lopa, who says, if we could wipe any memory of the perfect gameplay experience from our minds and play it all again, what would you play? And for me, it's the third boss of Shadow of the Colossus. Truly mesmerizing. Yeah. So I guess you can get more specific, more granular.
Okay.
If you want something specific.
I thought about this because I actually recently wrote a list about sort of like video game moments that you wish you could forget for the right reasons. And
oh, that's cool.
I was like thinking about like Bioshock and it's like, would you kindly thing. I thought that was going to be my most pivotal moment, but I actually realized that if I forgot that and then went back through it again, maybe, like, you know when you like do the butterfly effect where you think like maybe it was a perfect storm of what was going on in my life at the time, what I was like reading because I read the book alongside it and stuff like that, blah blah blah. Maybe I wouldn't have the same appreciation and love for it if I just went and redid the game itself. Now, I think that I would like to instead recapture a moment of my youth by going way back to when Resident Evil 1 came out for the PlayStation 1. And because me and my cousin Neil, we played through that game together. And when I say we played through, he played through a lot of the games. And I basically just sat there absolutely trying not to like wet my pants sort of thing. It was pretty terrifying as a young kid. So I would like to go back and recapture that moment. Like, go back, play that game with him, have that experience again. Mm. That would be lovely, because that and Resident Evil 2 were pretty much my entryway into horror as being an enjoyable video game medium. Like, before that, I'd never had shown any interest in it, no interest in like horror, scary films, because obviously you're a kid. Mm-hmm. But this time was like, oh, this is scaring me, and I kind of want to know why it's scaring me.
I think for me, like, because my, I remember thinking, like, horror-wise, earliest memories, it's things like in the original Metal Gear Solid, like, there are parts that are really freaky and creepy. Like, when you're in the elevator, and then Otacon's just like, hey, the guys that stole my stealth prototype suits are in there with you. And I just thought that was terrifying, because I was like, oh, there's like three bodies right next to you. Things like that, or when you find the corridor full of bodies before you fight Grey Fox.
Yeah, that was intense as a kid. That was a lot of blood and gore for like a game
lots
that didn't have that
chests
much.
Chests opened up.
Yep.
It's freaky. But yeah, for me, if it's a specific moment, my most euphoric thing in gaming, it's when you get the rocket launcher for the first time in Halo 2 and you just get to take on the Scarab tank. Oh, I just... the music kicks in and I just... It's so good, and it's just like the fact that they give you, like, okay, it's like you've got this big long runway, this big long like kind of almost like an alleyway kind of thing, with a bunch of raised platforms, and it's like, okay, how do you as Master Chief want to take on this tank? And you can kind of get ahead of it and jump onto the thing and clear it out from the inside out, or you can just like pick your spots from the outside. I just absolutely loved how freeform that was. It was like a moving level, and like you said, it's backed by Steve Vai's Molnir mix of the original Halo music, which is in itself,
it is so good,
sweetest piece of music ever.
Is that, like, not just up there, is it one of the best pieces of video game music ever?
I honestly think so. I mean, every time I go back to the Halo music, the main Halo theme, I think, is one of the greatest pieces of video game music ever, or pieces of orchestral music ever, or whatever. Just the sort of, I don't know what you would call, I was going to call it gang vocals. What would you call the chants? Like the singing, the sort of rhythmic
orchestral
singing. It's
like monks. Choir singing stuff? Like,
kind of like choir singing. That sort of elevates it in a way that so few other games, if any really, have gone anywhere near. But yeah, that's up there with like Final Fantasy VII or Final Fantasy IX, just those really like God tier scores. Or like Persona 4 or something, like stuff that is just absolutely...
Persona 5 has got an amazing soundtrack.
5's
well.
Incredible too, yeah. But yeah, Halo, and then especially just adding, I mean, it was 2003 or 2 or whatever when Halo 2 came out, adding just guitar riffs and crazy solos and all that kind of stuff. Shout out too, if you go on YouTube, you can watch when Steve Vai first recorded that. And the vast majority of what's in the final cut, he just improvised on the spot.
That's incredible.
Like, it's really cool. There's like a half hour version where he's just playing and playing and playing, and they're just sort of like, oh, do you want to do another one? He's like, yep, cool, let me try this, and then they just sort of stitched it together into this perfect version that became the final version. But there is like one run in the middle of that that just is what they used for the final song.
That's
like,
so cool.
Steve Vai is unreal. If you just like his playing, you can watch way more of it. But yeah, next question from Bob Grant, who says, looking back, what's your favorite list that you've done? Just curious.
Favorite list that I've done? I mean, it's hard to pick a favorite when we, between us, we've done over, let's like ballpark figure, how many lists do we record a week? We probably do between, at the very least, we do 5. At the very most, I do about 25.
You're across multiple channels. I'm just gaming, but I'm also more on the management side of it. So I give out about 50 ideas or something. But like in terms of my voice, it's two to three a week for me.
I think that since I've been here since 2016-ish, that I must have done over 1,000 lists now.
You'll have done a lot. I mean, if you go on our website, on the website stats, like nearly every voiceover is an article, so you can look at the amount of articles you've done. There's an absolute ton.
So trying to pick my favorite out of that is... I like asking me which grain of sand I enjoyed getting in my shoe the most. No, I kid. I loved working on the majority of them. There were a few articles out there that you are... I remember when I was especially earlier on in the business, I was like, you just do those ones there. Like, you don't adapt them, don't do anything. You just have to read it as written. And I was like, it's not really my take.
That's the most worky part of it, yeah.
Yeah, but I'd say that like any of my... I mean, it's not a list because it's the these things suck stuff, but I love every single one of those because it's being able to write in a over-the-top hyperbolic way of how much I dislike something. And me as a person, I like to think of myself as quite a positive person. So for me to like dig deep and be like, oh, what really annoys me about video games?
Well, it's like the industry's so stupid and over-the-top and like is sometimes needs to be insulted or have the negatives pointed out that it always fits. For the specific lists, I always like end of year stuff. I always love when we can do best games of the year because I get to finally like sit down and go back over everything and then try and rank it, and we can have some of the weighted rankings that we've done where everyone votes for stuff like the Crash Bandicoot remake
the best one.
I don't even think it is when that was on our best games of the year for 2018 or 19 or whatever hellish year that was.
You were fuming, mate.
Ridiculous. But that was all in there, and then if it's outside of list stuff, if it's just videos, it would be just any of the editorial stuff that we get to do. I love there was a whole thing about Red Dead Redemption 2 and Rockstar that I was a big fan of. And then, list-wise, I did a piece on the other month. It was like why people are giving up on video games. It was just looking at the statistics coming out with the pandemic and just how people are treated as consumers, which I thought was maybe way too negative. But the response to it in the comments was like, okay, thank you for saying this. I completely feel this as well. So I felt way more vindicated as an old ranty man.
I also enjoyed doing my 7 Deadly Gaming Sins with Osley, who's now obviously moved on. We like went through every single gaming sin and found it and applied it to the industry, and I enjoyed doing that because again even though it's like writing from a negative space, I enjoyed looking at things in a slightly more critical fashion and you know, emulating the likes of Stephanie Sterling and stuff like that, because it's that thing of like being able to talk openly about video games freely and critique them but in a way that's trying to make the industry better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's always the thing about like some people, I think, confuse the idea of what being a fan is. For me, like being a fan of something is that you can see the negatives and you can address them and critique them and like suggest ways to improve them. It's not being a fanboy or whatever where you just blindly love something. Like to truly love something is to see the flaws and acknowledge them and talk about them.
100% agree.
Yeah, that makes it stronger overall. Next question from Paul Parsons, who says, as someone who foolishly stayed with the Xbox during the One era and beyond, what brands have you stayed loyal to long after you should have? Doesn't have to be food, or was it nostalgia that kept you with them?
What have I stayed loyal to? Very little, my friend. I'm like a mercenary in my life. My loyalty is for
not even Sonic. Not even Sonic could keep him. It's he's got to say no at some point.
Nah, it's Dynasty Warriors, isn't it? Like I know that half of the games that come out are absolute trash, but at the same time, I cannot stop playing them. So this is the thing, Scott. I know that you don't. You are well versed in the Dynasty Warriors canon.
I could have a conversation on it, but I've not played one since like 2.
Now there's like they do like occasionally do these things called offshoots where they're like They're called Empires games. And what they are, mm-hmm. instead of like the hack and slash thing of you just going through the Romance of the Three Kingdoms saga, you actually get a bit of like base management, army management. You get to send Ooh. Like people through China, choose which regions to attack and how you're going to do it, how many men are you going to send there, how much mm-hmm. backups and power. Like they are the like light strategy element that really hooks me in. And mm-hmm. there is the newest one, which is Dynasty Warriors Nine Empires, which is, and I know it is hot garbage. Like, it is okay. bad compared to the previous ones that we got, because it's just, like, taking less, more and more away each time the mm-hmm. one comes out. But I am about 40 hours deep in it, man. I don't know what's going on.
I think Dynasty Warriors is your Sonic. The thing that came to mind in terms of what have I... Well, that's the thing. Sonic would be absolutely be mine, because I was talking to my wife about this the other day. The actual hit ratio of worthwhile Sonic games, there's
it's
like
so
four
low.
Of them.
It's so low.
It's so low. Like, you look at the amount that there are in total. Let's say there's like 50 mainline games or something. There's like 10% of them, if that is worth playing.
Okay, let's go through the good games, right? Because it's easier to list the good games in Sonic rather than the bad ones. Mm-hmm. So good games are Sonic Adventures...
Dude, if you go back to Sonic Adventure now, those games suck.
Okay, fair.
Okay, you got the original trilogy, Sonic, like, you know, Sonic 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
Sonic Mania, which is kind of like the original trilogy, but you've got the bonus levels.
Okay, so we've got four.
I really love Sonic Generations. I think that's a really good blur of the old and the new.
That was the one where you had the 2D elements playing as the old Sonic, and then you had 3D elements playing as the newer Sonic, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And you can do, each level is reinterpreted two different ways. It plays two different ways. That game just plays really, really well.
And then what do
that
you have?
That might be it. I mean, there's other stuff that I can have fun with, like Sonic Colors, and I can have fun with Sonic Forces. There's a bit where you team up with Sonic as your little avatar in Sonic Forces, and it plays a really cheesy song. And I was like, this is like me with Sonic, this.
No Shadow the Hedgehog, mate. No Sonic R. No Sonic the Fighters. Well, what's wrong with you?
I almost downloaded Sonic the Fighters. It was on sale for like £2, and I was like, I don't need this. I don't need this in my life.
You might as well have thrown that £2 down the toilet and flushed it, mate. What are you doing?
I didn't need that in my life. And like I said, I played all the Sonic games. I've still not played Shadow the Hedgehog.
Don't.
So
just don't.
That's Josh's favorite Sonic game, but it's not a Sonic game.
So Shadow the Hedgehog is to Sonic the Hedgehog what Dirge of Cerberus is to Final Fantasy.
God, if someone said their favorite Final Fantasy was Dirge of Cerberus, that's what I feel when someone says Shadow is their favorite.
I've met people who have said that. When I went to school with a kid who got Final Fantasy Dirge of Cerberus, no one else in the class had bought it because we'd all seen it for what it actually was, and just mm-hmm. was touting it as being the best Final Fantasy game. Like, Final Fantasy VI, get out of here. Final Fantasy VII,
we don't need you.
Pass, mate. Final Fantasy VII.
We just need aiming mechanics over our shoulders.
And no jumping.
Yeah, thing, I mean, as much as they're trying to revisit a lot of plot points for the upcoming Crisis Core stuff and the upcoming mobile remake of Final Fantasy VII, I don't need Dirge of Cerberus in my life whatsoever. And they keep saying that it's going to be part of the main timeline, and I just don't need it in there.
Remake Part 2 is going to come out and just be just a remake of Dirge of Cerberus.
The thing is, at the end of Dirge of Cerberus, if they go down that route again,
it
breaks
makes no
everything.
Sense. Canonically, it makes no sense because of him being a demon at the end.
Yeah, he's like a big old god or something, so I don't know what they're going to do with that. Anyway, this has been the Entitled Banter Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
A massive thank you to all of you for sending in your questions. You can find us over on Twitter at /LP89 for myself and Jules.
I'm at RetroJ, but the O is a zero. And remember to check in next Thursday because we'll be asking for your hot takes, they gaming, film, music, or food, or otherwise. Anything else, ask us any question at all, apart from bank details and like other stuff that would allow you to like hack our lives and dox us. Yeah, apart from that.
Yeah, don't do that. The hot pin codes that we can rustle up. But for now, thank you all very much, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye. Where my mug?
Where is the mug?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.